with that on the one side, on the other side, you have a very capable, hard-bitten cavalryman who is absolutely brilliant at the things cavalry was supposed to do during the Civil War, and that is screening your own army so the enemy doesn't know what you're doing, and going out and gathering intelligence about what the enemy is doing. Stuart did not have anyone on either side who exceeded his talents in those areas. Probably the best cavalryman, I think, of the war in those classic cavalry functions. He'd made spectacular rides clear around George McClellan's army twice earlier in the war, gotten lots of headlines for it, and now his pride had been stung by Brandy Station. I think that it had an effect, this experience of Brandy, almost immediately, in that Stuart determined that he was going to ride around Joseph Hooker's army when he got the chance, and his decision to do that was going to mean that Lee would march into Pennsylvania without the benefit of Stuart's intelligence, because as Stuart started to ride around Hooker's army started to march northward, and Stuart found himself on the far side of Hooker's army, moving north as Hooker moved north, and the bulk of Lee's army was to the west of Hooker. So he's going to leave Lee without good intelligence for about 3 weeks. But still, the campaign began well for the Confederates. They marched rapidly north. There was a battle called the Second Battle of Winchester in mid-June. On the way north, Richard Ewell won a tidy little victory there and captured several thousand Union prisoners. The Confederates made their way to the Potomac River, crossed the river, and as the third week in June passed, Lee's army was spread out in a big fan-shaped pattern across much of southern Pennsylvania, a part of it at Chambersburg, another part of it under Ewell, all the way to the Susquehanna River, not far from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Now, as Lee was marching north, Hooker told Lincoln, "Now's a great time for me to go capture Richmond." And Lincoln reminded Hooker that he didn't really care about Richmond at this point. The biggest rebel army was marching toward Union territory. That was Hooker's target, not Richmond. And Lincoln made a mental note that Hooker did not seem anxious to engage Lee in battle again. There was a little quibbling back and forth about just what the best Union response to Lee's movement would be. And at one point, there was a debate about what to do at Harper's Ferry. Hooker wanted to do one thing, others in the War Department something else, and in a snit, Hooker submitted his resignation in a quarrel with Henry W. Halleck, and Lincoln accepted it. So the Army of the Potomac has a change of command in the midst of these very important operations. On June 27th, Lincoln named George Gordon Meade, who was commanding the 5th Corps in the Army of the Potomac, to be the Army's chief. This is the fourth commander in just 7 months for the Army of the Potomac. They'd had McClellan, and then Burnside, and then Hooker, and now Meade. No continuity at the top. Meade learned of his appointment in the pre-dawn hours of June 28, 1863. Meade wasn't Lincoln's first choice, and he didn't really want the job, and who can blame him? Here he's thrust into command in the midst of circumstances he doesn't fully understand, and with orders to take care of the threat to the Republic posed by Lee and his army, the premier rebel army. He had to act immediately. He'd been born in Spain into the family of a wealthy American merchant, was 47 years old, graduate of West Point, veteran of the Mexican War. When I describe all these army commanders, you can fill out the blocks by now. They're all pretty much the same ones. They're all West Pointers. Most of them fought in the Mexican War. Meade had a good enough record from the Mexican War. He was primarily an engineer before the war. He's not one of the men who got out of the army. He commanded different levels from the beginning of the war, of the Civil War on. He was a brigade commander, and then a division commander, and then a corps commander. And he had led at each level with skill, if not brilliance. He was tall and thin, very heavy bags under his eyes. He was balding. He wore glasses. He was very touchy, given to outbursts of anger. His temper would go off very, very quickly, had a tendency to lash out in the heat of the moment. That temper, together with the glasses and the bags under his eyes, caused some people to give him a very unusual nickname. They called him a damned old goggle-eyed snapping turtle. It's too long a nickname to really work. A good nickname has to be shorter.